Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. The women in the all-Indigenous burlesque group Virago Nation stripped down to flesh-colored bodysuits on stage, along with props and images that invoke a number of stereotypes. They're a hit at places like Vancouver's annual Talking Stick Festival. Another Indigenous artist beads leather fetish masks. These are among a variety of artists turning to art to make a statement about power and sexuality. We'll talk about artistic expression of Indigenous sexuality right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The head of Canada's largest Native organization says the federal government should delay legalizing marijuana for at least a year. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the government plans to make marijuana legal by the end of the summer.
Perry Bellegarde is the national chief of the Assembly of First Nations. His comments about the delay came after the Senate Aboriginal Peoples Committee released a report after it studied what impacts pot legalization would have on Native communities. The committee says those communities need more time. And Bellegarde agrees, adding that it would give Native groups time to consult with their people because Native groups were not originally consulted about the legislation.
We've always talked about duty, consult, and accommodate. So there's issues of education, about health, about the excise tax. Again, that we weren't part of those dialogues and discussions. So if that's what the Senate committee or the report's recommending, we'd concur with that because it does affect our people as well.
The Senate committee described the issue as an alarming lack of consultation with Indigenous communities. The report adds that time is needed to also develop culturally appropriate educational materials to make sure Native people understand the new law. And there must also be addiction and mental health support available and discussions about tax sharing. Some reserves also want the ability to enact their own bylaws on the sale and use of marijuana, such as they already do in barring alcohol sales. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The University of South Dakota Center for Disabilities is launching an educational outreach effort focused on Native Americans. The Oyate Circle will host workshops in tribal communities, as South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Jackie Hendry reports.
Jim Warren is a member of the Oglala Lakota Tribe and has more than 20 years of experience running disability-focused training groups in San Diego, California. He's been hired to lead the new program and says he's excited to help his own tribe and others in the state. Warren says the workshops will include input from disability counselors, tribal vocational rehabilitation groups, and staff from both USD and tribal colleges.
I want to have kind of a buffet of services and awareness in terms of where folks can come in and just be aware of the variety of services available.
He says each workshop will produce a handbook of materials for participants that he calls Disabilities 101. Warren says rates of disabilities are disproportionately high for Native Americans, but treatment can be difficult to find.
And a lot of that has to do with the poverty realities of many of our reservations, as well as the health care. The Indian Health Service does what it can, but it's underfunded, so therefore doesn't have the access to a lot of the disability specialized services and supports in the medical field.
In addition to partnerships with tribal colleges, Warren says the Oyate Circle will also give diversity presentations to the State Department of Health and Human Services. For National Native News, I'm Jackie Hendry in South Dakota.
The Oyate Circle's first workshop is May 25th at Oglala Lakota College, with more scheduled around the state in July. The House Appropriations Committee Thursday adopted an amendment to support tribal victim service programs. It was adopted by a voice vote. The McCollum-Cole Amendment modifies the Commerce, Justice, Science Appropriations Bill. Without it, tribal funding would be cut from the Crime Victims Fund. Tribes and Native organizations hope similar language will be included in the Senate version of the bill, which is expected to be marked up in June. The four-day Navajo Hopi Honor Ride began Thursday in St. Michael's, Arizona. Motorcyclists started the event in 2003 to honor Lori Paestiwa, the first female Native American to be killed in combat. This year, participants will cover 1,000 miles in Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado to honor veterans and those who lost their lives in military conflicts. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and we are here live with you today. I'm Tara Gatewood. There are many hush-hush subjects that, when left alone, can fester and create negative spaces and feelings and can lead a person to lose or never explore their power. One of these hush-hush subjects is sexuality, how it's defined and how it's shaped and how it's expressed. When we think of Native women, their portrayal in mainstream media, they are often seen as objects and promiscuous ones at that. And if you've come across a romance novel, there's a Native figure on it, chances are his narrative also beams out through the image, a buff savage romantically ravishing a non-Native woman. So what do these narratives do when they are seen by Native eyes? What about in defining indigenous sexuality? And what happens when Natives step forward, and in some cases to the stage in a burlesque show, to say, this is how I see and celebrate my sexuality? What about when Native people speak up and declare settler colonial constructs like patriarchy can no longer create the parameters in which our sexuality and gender is defined or expressed? And what happens when we talk about just what has been lost and what has filled its void? Well, in this next hour, we'll find out what happens. But before we do, let's enter one of our guests' worlds and how they are artistically challenging things. Now, burlesque may not be everyone's cup of tea, but the group Virago Nation is building a following in Vancouver, British Columbia, where they are based. In addition to the campy old-fashioned striptease aspect of their act, the all-Indigenous burlesque group also brings in a message. We are listening to audio from one of Virago Nation's signature performances at the Vancouver Uncovered Showcase at the Vancouver International Burlesque Festival. The music is A Tribe Called Red. It's their song, Burn Your Village to the Ground. One of the women is wearing a Pocahontas Halloween costume. One is wearing a Chief Wahoo t-shirt. One is staggering around carrying a bottle of liquor. And one is welding plastic dream catchers. Eventually, the dancers literally strip off the stereotypes, beat them on the ground, and toss them in the fire. They're wearing mostly flesh-colored bodysuits, and Virago Nation's stated mission is to reclaim Indigenous sexuality from the toxic effects of colonialism. Today, we'll hear about what exactly that means to talk through the arts, and we'll also talk with another artist who uses Native imagery and elements of sexuality in her work. You are welcome to join the conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And right now, joining us from Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada, is Shane Sable. She is a convening member of Virago Nation, and she is Gik-San. It's our pleasure to welcome her into the hour. Shane, thank you for being with us.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Shane, we have definitely unpacked a lot today in talking about what we say or what we mean when we're saying Indigenous sexuality, and then being brave enough to step forward and say, here's one way I want to express it. And so, Shane, when we think about all of this, what would you like to start us off with when we start unpacking things on just what Indigenous sexuality means and what it means to express it as strong Indigenous nations? Shane, go ahead.
Well, I think the thing that really catalyzed the group and our initiative is that all of the women I spoke with who were Indigenous and burlesque performers struggled with the same challenge of bringing their sexuality and their identity together in a public performance sense. And that's because we suffer so much from the oppression of colonial expectations of us to be the noble savage or to be objectified. And when we want to combine those identities in an authentic way, our identities as performers and as Indigenous people, we are scared that we're perpetuating those negative stereotypes. And so we needed to find a way to reject that so that we could bring our true selves to all parts of our life, because that's the best way that we can move forward and be healthy and happy.
And Shane, we shared some of the details that went on in the performance that we were hearing in the background. And take us step by step through that of how you've done some of what you just mentioned.
Well, we started off with a snippet from Peter Pan at the very beginning of the clip, because of the sort of racial slurs that were used and easily bandied about at that time. And we thought that that was the right setup for us to get a bit of a wink so that when the music shifts, that indicates to the audience that this is a rejection of what has come before. This is something new. And that was the best way that we could find to really carve out space for ourselves by addressing our challenges head on. So we did. We thought of all of the worst portrayals of our people that we could. And instead of just knowing that those were images that were projected onto us, we embodied them so that folks in the audience could see what they were putting on us and then our reactions to those stereotypes, to take them off, to reject it, to say, no, this isn't us. This is who we are, and we will present ourselves in the way that we want you to receive us.
So you've basically turned objectification into empowerment, and that may not be an easy thing for some folks to do, but in the arts, I think it provides a special space to really get people thinking. What are your thoughts when it comes to really flipping things on its head and making sure, you know, the audience understands or it becomes a part of them or they learn a new narrative? What does it take to get to that point?
Gosh, that's a big question. I think that what I have witnessed as we do this act again and again in front of so many people is that it's one of the great things about the art of burlesque is that the audience is there because they are already on your side. So we're sort of starting out just by virtue of the medium. We're starting out with a little bit of a step up, I think, because the audience is there. They want to support. They want to celebrate. And we're just guiding them into what to celebrate. And it's been my experience that people are really grateful, even though the message can be a bit rough at times, because it's delivered with love and because it's delivered in a way that gives an alternative for people to see and support, that they are happy to follow us there. I think it's really just about taking folks by the hand and saying, here's what we have to say, and here are alternatives to what you might want to say.
And Shane, what are some of the reasons that we are in this space where you do have to take their hand or guide them into a new way of thinking? What are some of the things that have built the walls or misconceptions or some of the things we mentioned in the intro as well of, you know, how we have been objectified? You know, where did all this come from? Where do you put the start of it?
Well, historically, it's sort of it goes way, way back, right? One of the issues that we're finding now in the current rape culture that we live in is that the concept of women's agency has not necessarily been something that's been honored on Turtle Island since contact. And that has grown into incorporate some really severe ideologies around women's bodies and what kind of women are good women and what kind of women are bad women or immoral. And because of our cultural disinheritance, we don't have other models at this point to look on to know that it doesn't have to be that way.
And Shane, you know, there's a lot, too, that is connected with the nude body. And a lot of times, anytime there's nudity, eyebrows raise, things happen. And in many of our native cultures, nudity isn't seen that way. Talk to me a little bit about how this kind of gets challenged. And again, you are reteaching people how to think about things. Go ahead, Shane.
We are lucky enough to be with a group of women who are all sort of fiercely protective of their body sovereignty. And I think that that is something that really comes into play with these conversations is that, you know, we're lucky that we feel that way because not everyone has been able to unlearn or fight back against so much of this oppression that we experience. So that sort of fierceness can't be understated in this particular context. I really put my hands up to my performance sisters for their courage as well in this project.
And Shane, if people are interested in seeing exactly, you know, what the group is doing or even hearing some of the philosophies, where do they find you?
We have a very active Facebook page. It's Virago Nation. Just search us on Virago Nation on Facebook. We also have a website that's virago nation.ca. And we keep pretty active Instagram account as well. So you can sort of follow us through the group or several of the individual soloists who are part of the group. We all also have our own independent performer profiles on Facebook where you can see what we're up to as individuals as well.
And I appreciate you sharing that. And so, Shane, is what we're talking about today something that's hard to just introduce into our Native nations or even sitting there with people in your own family saying, hey, I want to talk about just exactly what Native sexuality is, what my sexuality is. Is it hard to do what I just did?
You know, it's really challenging to be completely frank. I don't have these conversations with my family. Part of the reason I do the performance work is because of the culture of silence around sexuality that has been passed down through my family. And I can only imagine that my sisters in performance experience something similar. We are in a field where not only is it we're racialized now in our field, but also it's a field where there's so much stigma around sexuality and feminine bodies that several of us aren't able to be upfront in our professions of what we do in our artistic lives. So it really it's very hard on so many levels. It's a professional level. It's a personal level.
And I'm really curious as we continue here in this conversation about when we do start talking about some of this, what does it lead to? What do we discover? You can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And you can also send us your thoughts on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you know what? I want to read a message that we got from Melissa on our social media. And they wrote, I think it's important for women to really own their sexuality in whatever way makes them feel most powerful. So often we see sexuality only through the lens of the male and or colonizer gaze. When Indigenous women own their sexuality, it can become such a powerful force. What do you think? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Shane, I'm going to make way for another one of our guests. Joining us from Chicago, Illinois is Lulu. She is an international performing burlesque dancer. She is Mohawk, and it is our pleasure to welcome her into the hour as well. Lulu, thank you for being with us.
Hey, let's go, Goga. Hi.
Great to have you. And Lulu, what do you think about the words that came off of social media from Melissa?
I mean, I couldn't agree more. Also, to add to what Shane had said, it is quite a challenge for Indigenous women, at least it's been my experience, to have that dialogue with ourselves and to express our sexuality, especially artistically and in front of an audience. It's been a bit of a challenge to combine culture and sexuality, and also to decolonize our sexuality. It's quite challenging.
And so, Lulu, what drew you to being a part of this?
Well, I've been doing burlesque for 13 years. And my background is I was in the arts. So I was doing musical theater from the age of 5 to 18 in Montreal, actually on the reserve, which I grew up, which is Ganawake. And then when I went to university, I really couldn't commit to the rehearsal schedule, and I had to stop. And a friend of mine had suggested burlesque. She was like, well, it's everything that you love. It's singing, it's dancing, it could be costume design, it's really open, and I think you'd really enjoy it. So I started a week after my 18th birthday, and I've been performing ever since. But the first part of my career, at least the really like first decade, I spent trying to find my voice as an artist, and also was kind of just discovering my sexuality. I was a teenager. So now reflecting back some 13 odd years of just where that's kind of evolved to and what kind of performance I do now, who I am as a woman, and my experience is really, you know, it's really been all over.
And so, Lulu, taking a look at this art form, and we know that it dates back, and the way I'm hearing the two of you are using it is to really, you know, see it as a way to empower yourself. And so a lot of times this performance style is challenged, and some people even label it, well, it's just stripping. And there's a lot there with people's perceptions of what this is. And then when you say you're using this platform to deconstruct colonial things, what happens then? Talk to me a little bit about maybe any challenge or pushback that you get in using this kind of form. Lulu, start us off.
Most definitely. A few years ago, I was going to compete for a world title in burlesque. I believe it was APTN did a story just in support of my journey and the competition that I was about to enter. And there was some really negative comments on in response to the article that was written. And one had said something to the key of, this is not something that Indigenous women should be embracing. We should be teaching modesty. You know, there's a missing and murdered women epidemic in Canada. And, you know, we really should be preaching safer practices for our women. And that was really, you know, hard to read. And I kind of grappled with that for a little bit. And, you know, my thought on that whole thing is, yes, there is an epidemic of women that are being targeted, you know, racially and especially in Canada. However, I grew up around strong Mohawk women, and modesty was definitely not something that was taught in our household. We were taught to be outspoken and strong. So I was fortunate in that respect, growing up with a very strong nation and a very close tie to my culture. And I know that that's not something that everybody has and can speak to, but I felt it was almost my duty to kind of preach this unapologetic approach to reclaiming sexuality, because it's very important. It's a very important response to, like, colonialism and, yeah, this rape culture that we live in. So now I'm a mom. I have a little girl, and I think we're living in a time where it's increasingly more important to have these discussions, these uncomfortable conversations about our roots as women and also our sexuality.
And so, Lulu, I know you got to get going here. Is there anything else you want to leave us with as we talk about turning to the arts to express things, regaining power, flipping things on their head, and even challenging constructs? Go ahead. You got about a minute.
Oh, yeah, sure. I think it's just great in the past decade just to see the amount of women, Indigenous women, come onto the scene and really just embrace their culture, and encourage other performers, other women of color, to come out and share their stories. So, good job. I'd like to keep seeing more of it. It's great. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Lulu, thank you for giving us a ring today, and we also hope you'll give us a ring. Give us a ring at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We have Shane Sable on the line with us, and she is a part of Virago Nation, a burlesque group coming to us out of Canada. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And when it comes to this conversation, what do you think about it being explored through the arts? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And what do you think about burlesque specifically? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And when you hear our guests talk about how they are using it to challenge certain things, using it as empowerment, what are you thinking? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we'll get into different aspects of this. But I'm also wondering, parents, if you're out there, you know, what kind of conversations are you able to have with your young people about this? Elders, we are always looking to you for advice and thoughts on things. Is what you're hearing today, is it reminiscent of something that happened in the past? Does it remind you of when miniskirts showed up? You can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. You can also reach out to us on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We appreciate you tuning in here today. And we're going to pause for a moment to tell you a little bit about what is coming up next week as we start another week here on our electronic talking circle. But our phone lines are going to stay open. The lava flowing from the Kilauea volcano is again changing the landscape of Hawaii Island. Much of the national media coverage focuses on property loss and evacuations. Many Native Hawaiians, though, recognize and honor the presence of the goddess Pele. On the next Native America Calling, we'll hear about the traditional understandings of Hawaiian volcanoes.
haumi takia piki. Ni tiwa eki e tila tchokstapelo. Wichozani wapi a ioptea iae ki ni tiwa he zania washtea umpiktelo. Lilmas apkayo 1-800-318-2596 nish lil yayo healthcare.gov. Le wotchani ki Medicare na Medicaid o tietan hielo. Doksha ake.
Support by New Mexico Community Capital, helping make the impossible possible with tools for success for emerging Native American enterprises, including micro-lending available for early-stage Native-owned businesses. Information at neirprogram.org. Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And here on our program, we focus on Native American issues and topics each day, Monday through Friday, from 11 a.m. to noon Mountain Time. And if you're curious about other topics we discussed on this program, visit our archives on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And if you want to take our show with you, you can subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher. Today we are focusing in on ways some Indigenous artists are crossing paths with sexual themes in a way to get a message across. One example is how Anishinaabe and Métis artist Dana Danger is doing her work. They aim to make a statement about power and sexuality with their beaded fetish masks, and we'll hear more about it in the hour. And you're also welcome to join the conversation, too. Does artwork or performance help promote healthy conversations about sexuality, or does it alienate elders and other traditional people? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you know what? We got a caller on the line. Let's go ahead and hear what folks are thinking out there in Native America. We're going to hear from Donna in Wasilla, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. Donna, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Good morning. I think this is a topic that really needs to be opened up among Native people, because we can get swallowed up by the mainstream culture and take on their views very easily. That happened to me in my early 20s. Now that I'm older, I'm 67, I begin to realize what happened when I look back, that I was kind of went with what everybody else was thinking and doing. And to focus in on who you are as a Native person and what that means is, to me now, is to be more moderate and more conservative and being very careful and respectful when you're engaging in any kind of conversation dealing with sexuality. And so I think that the cultural element introduced into it makes it a little bit more complicated to be sensitive to those needs of especially the elders who they more or less grew up being taboo, you know, my mom talking about it. And so now to open up about it, we have to be very careful to choose our words wisely.
Sure. And Donna, I appreciate you giving us a ring. And definitely we don't aim to alienate anybody. And I think the people on the line today, I want to turn to them again. We also have Shane Sable on the line today. And she is joining us from Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada. And she is a convening member of Virago Nation. Shane, it's our pleasure to have you here with us today. And definitely want to give you space, your thoughts about not wanting to alienate. But I think just opening up this discussion and understanding how people think about this and feel about it is the goal. Anything more you want to say, Shane?
Absolutely. I just want to say that you know, we are here, we do this work to serve Indigenous people. We're not here to do it for anyone else. And so we do our very best to go about it in a good way. And we speak to elders in our community, and we've been really lucky to have been embraced by many Indigenous communities across Turtle Island. We haven't had too much in the way of negative pushback, I'm very lucky to say. But we certainly embraced ourselves for it because we know just how wrought this topic is. And that's actually what we were struggling with. And that's how we knew that this art needed to be made, because we needed to be able to speak about something in order to understand ourselves. And I think that one of the hazards of keeping things taboo and quiet is that it gets easier for the mainstream culture to appropriate it. So I feel that in some ways we're trying to, you know, reclaim that sexuality from how it's been appropriated and used against us. And I think that that is part and parcel of what Lulu was talking about earlier around the different levels of violence that our communities still experience.
And Shane, for folks who are just joining us, we played a bit of a performance at the top of the hour where you really decided to challenge stereotypes. And is there anything more about what turning to the arts opens up to challenge some of this and even create this dialogue that we just heard from our caller is much needed?
Absolutely. You know, something that has really kept us going along this path and encouraged us is that every time we do a show, we get feedback from people in the audience or people who've just found out about us through these kinds of interviews. And, you know, young Indigenous women who say that they feel so alone and isolated and unable to talk about this, and that our presence and our representation has given them comfort and that they feel connected. And that is really the importance, I think, right? Because in the decolonial project, we're trying to regain our connections to one another.
All right. Thank you for that. Anything you want to share with Shane, you can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And I'm also curious what other people are thinking about colonialism, putting a black mark on Indigenous sexuality. Join us. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and meet another artist. Joining us on the line today from Montreal, Quebec in Canada is Dana Danger. Dana is a visual artist who is Métis, Anishinaabe, and Polish. It's our pleasure to welcome her to the hour. Dana, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, Annie, nice to meet you.
And Dana, we've uncovered a lot here. And is there anything you want to start off or springboard off of?
Oh my goodness, there's been like a lot of good discussion. And I mean, Shane is amazing. Lulu is amazing. I really love the work that they are doing, have been doing for some time. And so, I mean, oh, to springboard, I mean, there's a lot. My practice is very different, but also very similar themes about like different ways in which we express sexuality and gender presentation and how to do that in like a healthy and safe and consensual way. But I think sometimes even, you know, subjects like BDSM and sort of stuff sends red flags up for people. So.
And Dana, when people shy away from this or are at a point where you feel they've lost their power because they can't even talk about this, what is the biggest danger in that?
I think the biggest danger is when we don't talk about sexuality and that we're like not openly like having those discussions is there's like a lack of knowledge, and with a lack of knowledge comes not being able to know like how to even have healthy relations with each other. And when I say healthy, I mean, you know, consensual relations where we're able to talk about how we express love or like sexuality with each other, you know. And I think a lot of that comes, there's been a lot of a history of like shame and guilt and not speaking about that. I was raised Polish Roman Catholic, so I could go on about that stuff. And you just know that there is something inside of you that is saying that you have a right to be here. This doesn't feel right. There's something about even the core of my being, like from a really young person, that was saying that there's something wrong about the ways in which we're being quite silent about that, you know?
Indeed. And, you know, folks, if there's anything you want to add, you can join us. 1-800-996-2848. Dana, we're going to have you talk a little bit about your artwork and how you are challenging things. Maybe you are an artist too, and you use it as a platform to talk about sexuality or even challenging different constructs that go with it. You can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and say hello to Joyce in Wounded Knee, South Dakota, listening in on KILI. Joyce, thank you for giving us a ring. Welcome to the conversation. Go ahead. You're on air.
This is a nice day for this discussion. Nice day looking at it chronologically. I am very appreciative of my grandma, mother, and her teachings to me. The teaching that is intertwined in all that is being said today is Lena Takuki un makoteki na homini. Translated, it means all of the various parts of art, sex, whatever part that we are talking about is a part that's needful among people, and it is the parts that make the world turn in the mind of people, turn in the mind of nations, turn in the world. And that's all that is meant by what Grandma said. And that's what comes into mind.
Well, Joyce, we're glad you picked up the phone and dialed in. Thank you for giving us a ring there in Wounded Knee, listening in on KILI. Dana, any thoughts for our caller, Joyce? Dana, you there?
Yeah, we are. I'm here. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just to speak about what Joyce said?
Yeah, anything that you want to reflect on.
Absolutely. I really wish that there was more amazing elders and knowledge keepers, like, and folks just sharing that knowledge, you know, because I think it's so important to hear that. I was just smiling the whole time, just listening to her, because it's so good to hear it, that people understand the need for that, and that there has been many teachings going way far back about this, and that it's good to be able to have open dialogue about that. I mean, I have to tell you, I was a little bit nervous coming on a live radio station and kind of curious, like, what sort of, like, comments, especially if we're talking about the sexuality, nudity, fetish, masks, BDSM, you know, if those, I mean, we haven't really gotten into that yet, but, like, when we do, like, you never know quite what sort of response you're going to get. But I have to say that it's been really, it really has been warming my heart to, like, hear the callers, yeah.
And so, Dana, you dive right into all of that and even bring it out in an artistic way, even going as far as beating some of the masks. Talk to us about what you're saying through your art.
So for me, I'm what you would call maybe a visual artist. That's like the word that I like to use for that. But for me, it's about art is a way of, is a language. It's a visual language, a way that we communicate to the world, maybe ideas or complex things we've been thinking about. And for me specifically, it's just been about how I myself, I mean, I could speak up from my, like, from my personal feeling of just like suppression over my two-spirit identity, my sexuality, like the ways in which I move through the world that has been kind of blocked and kind of, and trying to have that in a healthy way and trying to, like, find others that relate to the ways in which I see the world as well, and wondering why it was so hard in some ways. But then when you find other kin like yours that have that kind of openness, then you're just like, oh, this could actually be really lovely and beautiful. And I wonder why I felt so much shame around that. And for me, art has been a really great way of communicating that outwards, that whoever, the work that I'm making, you know, that those people that identify with that are like, oh, this is meant for me. This is something that speaks to me, and it doesn't have to be mainstream. Not everybody has to understand that, but that's kind of like the saying we have, don't yuck my yum, from my co-thinker friend of mine, Janice Nicole. She talks about, you know, just because what's good to some may not be good to others, but we have more than enough space to have these expressions, you know?
Indeed. And Dana, with what you just said, I think a lot of times we get lost in some of this because we forget sometimes, you know, it's about individuality. And, you know, even you're saying of don't yuck my yum. Dana, what do you think about that? Why have we made this something that is a mass thing of deciding what a person prefers or deciding this is the right way when I'm hearing from you and I'm hearing from different folks on the line? It's about individuals and how they see things or what they're comfortable with and where they don't lose themselves. Dana?
Well, at least what I can say from Catholicism, missionaries, a lot of Christianity in some ways has been used to kind of control the people in a certain way that we have when we're even brought into the world. We're conditioned right from the get-go that either you're a man or woman, that like there's only one way, you know, you're only taught one way in school that that you're supposed to relate to each other in any of those like health, you know, sex ed classes. And there was nowhere where the kind of sexuality and the ways that I was expressing myself was being reflected at all. And so it really comes back to kind of like, I mean, at least here on Turtle Island and kind of like Western society, that's what I really see as a way of kind of controlling the people in that way to like how we are supposed to move through the world. But I feel like for a lot of us, that doesn't, we've come up against many obstacles because we know that that's not, there shouldn't only be one worldview in terms of like how we live our lives. And like many of our nations had complex, you know, social dynamics, had complex relations to each other, and also had complex ways of looking at gender. This idea of two genders even, you know, is kind of like bizarre to many other people, but that kind of like force, the colonial force was really good at erasing a lot of anything extra to that, to really focus on, on colonization, really. So, I mean, that's like a whole huge topic, but really that's kind of how I see it. So, you know, a lot of us are hurting because we don't fit into that very narrow way. I think even people that fit into that narrow way of life are not even really enjoying it that much, you know?
And Dana, when we think about some of the things that you have created, tell me how you're doing this through your work. You know, explain a little bit on how this works when you take a fetish mask and you beat it.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm really looking into the ways in which, like in my culture, that we gift to one another. So I make these masks, I bead them completely, but I'm also putting symbolism in them that is meant for that person specifically. So it becomes like a belonging. I'm really looking at the ways in which our objects have been turned into artifacts, become how they are kind of like divorced from the communities that they belong to. And really I'm trying to bring back that reciprocity within my relations to the people that I hold really dear to me, the different kind of interconnectedness of that queerness has with how we relate to each other. That, you know, that we don't have to be blood. I don't have to be in an intimate relationship with you in order to give to you, to, you know, in those ways in which we exchange. And the only real native thing about them is, I mean, perhaps all of it, really, the beadwork for sure. But it's not necessarily traditional. A lot of the symbols that I'm using are very specific sort of like relations or like symbols that mean something to me and the person I'm beading it for, but not, maybe not everyone would understand that, but there's still that kind of gesture that comes through when you see the work, how much hours and time it must have taken, you know? That's kind of a commit, you're showing that commitment to that person, you know? Same with photography. Mostly I'm a visual photography-based artist, so photography has a really complicated history of controlling narratives, and it's very much about power dynamics, who is behind the camera controlling the narrative and who is sitting for the camera and are they consenting to that whole conversation? And that's, I really try to like make sure that that is an ongoing conversation, that the person that's in front of the camera, who's like, you know, who I do these things for, that I bring into my own practice, know what they're getting into, that they understand where their image is going and how it will be used. And like that, they have control over how they are shown as well. That's really important.
And Dina, let's talk a little bit about power. And I think it's interesting we're talking about it in this way. And a lot of times when we have discussions with people who are working with youth, who are trying to empower young people to keep on living, that they talk about some of these very same aspects of power. And so many times and so many things in our lives and everything that comes at us is teaching us to give our power away. And so when you open this dialogue in this place and are also opening up the dialogue about sexuality, what do you think you're changing? You know, are we creating new ways of thinking? Are we getting back people to a space that they should have always had?
Absolutely. I feel like we're remembering, like, I don't think that we've ever really forgotten how to relate in this way, but there's this aspect of remembering, like, who we are and how we have relations to each other. And this idea of power, really, it's about agency at the end of the day. So allowing people to have agency and bodily autonomy, that they know themselves and their experience the best. But that doesn't mean selfness, like in a way of how we, it's even how we collaborate in community. I mean, even if I can use an example of Virago Nation, there are many different individuals who have many, like, different styles, different, like, everything, right? And not one person is, like, alike. And there is more than enough space for those representations and, like, the ways in which people want to express themselves happens, you know? And so I think that's really, like, giving people the ability to be able to choose and to live in the ways that they want. That's really important.
Indeed. And ladies, I want to hear your thoughts, too, about taking this to another level as well. And I'm reminded of words from an Apache artist, Bob Houses, who resides here in the Southwest, and talking about it's important to talk about these things, but it's also important to create our own narrative, our own space to talk about this. And when we're thinking of some of the ways, the art that you are involved in, taking a look at burlesque, taking a look at some of the things you've mentioned, Dana, and some might say, well, those are colonial things. What about creating an indigenous context or a space to have our own dialogue? What do you think about that? Dana, start us off.
Oh my goodness, this is a big one. I've had, Lulu, I've had people come to me as well and say, well, this way that in which you're working, this is colonial framework. This is, you know, and I understand the critique, absolutely. But for me, really what I'm looking at is the ways in which we exchange power. And I think for some, that is not really a reality. People are quite maybe disenfranchised, are racialized in a specific way, can't really seem to get a foot up of all the different obstacles that they have to go over. And I think that we are contemporary people, and however we move forward with the tools that we have now been given will be the ways in which we create, and that those will be like our ways. I think inherently that's already what we do, you know, we're very resourceful people. So that's just how I feel about that. So,
Well, I appreciate that. And Shane, anything to add?
As far as burlesque goes, I think that that's a tool that people have used to undermine colonial values from its very beginning. The fact that we are indigenous people and not the people from which that art form comes from is sort of a moot point.
And so, Shane, we've done some great work here talking about some of this. And sometimes people see burlesque in passing. And Dana, sometimes people see different types of artwork in passing, and they make judgment real quick. Any thoughts for our listeners today to maybe learn a little bit more, or maybe even be empowered to speak about how they're feeling, even if it's contradicts what we're talking about today? Go ahead, Dana.
I mean, that's the beauty and power of art. Like, not everyone is going to agree with your viewpoint, but that's why the dialogue around it is so important, that people have that space that they can, that there's choice, that there's many different choices of, like, how we want to express ourselves, that we do have to operate out of a place of abundance, that there is more than enough space for us to have these ideas rather than scarcity, which, you know, tells us to keep everything in. There's only so much to go around. I think to be open to the fact, to those ideas in a respectful way as well, you know, but often sometimes those of us on the fringe don't even get that opportunity. So it's always good for, I think, folks to, you know, they say with an art, you're probably going to judge it within like 10 seconds of you seeing it. So, you know, you kind of have to, that's a lot to live up to. So I think, I don't know, that's just some thoughts I have.
Sure. And Dana, before we wrap up, where can folks look more at your work?
I have a website, Dana Danger, D-A-Y-N-A, danger.com. I'm here based in Montreal in Jojage, but I have work all across, kind of like above the Medicine Line in Canada mostly. So that's a hint, hint. Any like U.S. galleries would love to come down, but mostly I would say online, any kind of social media platform. If you look up Dana Danger, you can find me.
All right. Thank you for that. And Shane, we are at the end of the hour. Again, any context you want to share?
Yeah, my final comments really are just that if people have different ideas and different perspectives on Indigenous sexuality, all I ask is that they share them. Virago Nation came together because we were suffocating under the silence around Indigenous sexuality. We know that our way isn't the only way. We don't want it to be the only way. We just want to get a conversation started. We're thirsting to hear from other people and know what they think.
What a wonderful way to wrap up the hour. I do appreciate you saying that, Shane. Thank you for being with us. And folks, that's going to do it for our hour today. If there's more you still want to share, you can post directly on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And you can also reach out to us via email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. That's going to do it for today. Thanks again to Shane Sable and also Dana Danger. And we hope you'll join us again next week for another lineup of Native topics. On Monday, we are focusing in on the cultural significance of lava and volcanoes in Hawaii. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. Thanks again. And you can also visit us online to sign up for our newsletter. And we look forward to meeting you here on Monday.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.